The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Welcome to the Radio Today programme. It's Stuart Clarkson here again in for Trevor with a special edition this week looking at a career in radio that's lasted more than 30 years so far and still going strong. Our guest this week started out as a station assistant in BBC local radio before joining Radio 1 in 82 to present a show on Saturday nights, then moved on to weekday evenings on Radio 1 for 3 years before spells at GLR, Radio 5. She's been instrumental in the birth of at least two radio stations, XFM in London, Crash FM in Liverpool, and for the last 15 years, a mainstay of the Radio 2 schedule alongside shows for Six Music and BBC WM. She is, of course, Janice Long, and I'm delighted she can join us on the programme.
Gosh, that's weird, hearing your history summed up in a few sentences.
Yeah. Well, let's start with why we're actually talking to you, Janice, because just recently you were back in your home city in Liverpool getting an honour from no less than Paul McCartney. Tell us how that came about.
I don't know, to be honest with you, but basically I was approached by Lipper, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts. And last year, they asked me if I would be prepared to, you know, accept an award. Unfortunately, I was going on my holidays and I went, no, I can't. So they said they'd postpone it till this year. And it was for my outstanding... Oh, God, that sounds awful. I hate saying things about myself. But they had an outstanding contribution to music, particularly new music and supporting new bands.
And how important has music and Liverpool been in your career, do you think?
Well, Liverpool, of course, was instrumental in me being into music. I mean, you know, I lived in a great place at a great time when loads of stuff was going on. But before that, I was always into music. I was like, you know, a little kid. When I, you know, pleaded with my parents to buy sheet music, and I remember sitting on the stairs listening to Two Way Family Favourites and loving Shirley Bassey singing Kiss Me, Honey, Honey, Kiss Me, and buying a guitar from Rushworth and Draper because I wanted to learn how to play Lola. And then as I got older, buying The Enemy on a Thursday, getting so excited about that. And then, you know, subsequently going to gigs. And so music has always been a part of my life.
So before you got into radio, you had a couple of other jobs, notably working for an airline. What was it made you wanted to get into the industry? Was it the kind of showbiz stuff that your two brothers were doing?
No, not at all. Nothing to do with it. I applied to the BBC when I left school. I'd never wanted to go to uni. And I applied to the BBC to be a reporter. And they told me, but also at the same time, I applied to be an air stewardess. And the BBC told me that I was academically fine, but not very worldly. And I got the job to be an air stewardess, and that was because I wanted to speak French and Spanish. So I thought, well, you know, that was an opportunity to use those languages and also to go to places that I'd never, ever been, because Mum and Dad didn't have loads of money, so our holidays were always just like camping, great holidays, but camping in Wales or Scotland or Cornwall or whatever. And so that was an opportunity for me to actually, you know, leave these shores and do something different. And I packed that in after a couple of years, having been to New York and Toronto and Barbados and Jamaica, and I packed it in to hitch. And I tried to hitch to Greece, but I ran out of money in Amsterdam. So I lived there for almost a year in a tent and worked in a wimpy bar, and then came home after doing a bit of grape picking and other bits and pieces. And there was a letter from the BBC, Radio Merseyside, saying, what have you been up to? And so I got in touch with them. And subsequently, I went in for an hour a week, learned how to... I was very techie. And that was my thing. So I learned how to use the desk, the jack fields and what have you. And that's how I got a job with the BBC.
How long were you there? A couple of years?
At Merseyside, I joined 79, and then I got a phone call from Radio 2, Radio 1, sorry, the back end of 82.
And that was, I read somewhere it was Paul Gambaccini that got you the job, is that right?
Paul Gambaccini. What happened was, so I was a techie, and then somebody, a guy called Reg Brooks, late Reg Brooks, absolutely fantastic, who encouraged me to broadcast. And I was doing a show and I interviewed Paul Gambaccini, and without me knowing, he went back to London and recommended me to Radio 1. And once again, without me knowing, they sat in a hotel across the road, listened to me doing a show and literally phoned me up and said, can you put on a long record? Because we need to talk to you, and offered me a job, which started about 2 weeks later.
So you got offered the job while you were on air, while you were doing another show? Wow.
I played Benny and the Jets, because that was the longest record I could find. And I actually thought the guy who was phoning me was, you know, a mate, forgive me, but I actually said sod off or words to that effect, because I thought it was a prank.
And then there was all this hype because there weren't very many women at Radio 1 at the time. I think you were only the second after Annie Nightingale.
Annie was there, and I always remember meeting Annie in the toilets, and she went, oh, so lovely to meet you, a fellow woman and an Aries. But no, I was the first woman to do a daily show at Radio 1, and also the first woman to do Top of the Pops.
And did it feel like a man's world then, both those places, Radio 1 and Top of the Pops?
Well, it was weird for me because I came from Radio Merseyside, which was not a man's world at all. You know, they had women in, you know, senior producers, head of news, what have you. And going to Radio 1 was like going backwards. All the, you know, females were secretaries, and they were lovely, but they were all taken on, obviously, for their looks. So for me, it was really a retro thing, and I couldn't believe. I walked in with, like, dyed hair and MAC clothes, and it wasn't that kind of place.
And, I mean, to get a show at Radio 1 from just being on local radio, you must have felt like it was a dream come true.
To be honest with you, I'd never listened to Radio 1. I know. I mean, I had, you know, bits. When I was, you know, Johnny Walker, when my parents could afford batteries for the radio, I did listen to Johnny Walker.
Not even John Peel?
I'd never listened to John Peel before I joined Radio 1. So it was a completely different arena for me to walk in there. And also, I felt really quite strange because, you know, being a woman was obviously different. But also being mad about music as well, because I was totally in to music. I was going to gigs all of the time, you know, buying records and what have you. And it was not exactly what I thought.
And that show you did in the evenings for 3 or 4 years, that was a kind of trailblazer, I guess, for what then became the evening session in the 90s, was it?
Yes, I suppose so. Who knows? I hope so.
In terms of you being a woman at Radio 1, after you, the kind of floodgates opened a bit and lots of people like Liz Kershaw came along, and subsequently we know the story with Marianne Hobbs and Edith Bowman, Joe Wiley. Do you think you kind of set up that happening?
I know I did. Because I've been told by previous heads of Radio 1, not the one that was in charge when I was there, but subsequent heads, that they would never, ever allow what happened to me, you know, because you know that I lost my job for being pregnant and not married, and I was told that I was a bad example. And yes, I've been told that, you know, that opened the floodgates. And you know, too right. You know, we need people like Marianne Hobbs on our radio. So, yes, it changed things.
And is that true, the story about you being sacked because you were either pregnant or unmarried or whatever?
Yes.
And were you told that at the time, or it was just that the impression? It was quite explicit.
No, I was told that.
And how did that kind of, how did you take that?
What can you do? I'm, you know, the eternal optimist. So, you know, I turned it round, and 6 days after giving birth, I did a TV show and carried on. You know, it was not going to get me down. You know, the man that told me that was stuck in his ways, and, you know, that's the way he is.
Not long after that, I think, was your first child born in 88, I think, is that right?
Fred was born in 88, yeah, February 88.
So the following year, you were doing breakfast on GLR. So how did you kind of manage having a small child and getting up and doing breakfast shows?
Like every other, you know, mum does, you get on with it. And I've got a great partner, and we've always worked it out between us. So it's never a problem. And, you know, I have to say, if you do this job, you are very lucky in terms of you're not doing 8 hours necessarily a day, are you? And you don't have, you know, you don't have to be in, well, I had to be in at a certain time, but I've always had Paul beside me, and we've always worked it out. We've never had a nanny. You know, we've just sorted it.
Shows that it can be done. I mean, at GLR as well, it was, I suppose, a little bit perhaps out of your comfort zone because it wasn't just playing records, it was doing news and sport and full service.
No, well, I'd done that before, so it wasn't out of my comfort zone. I did that at Merseyside. And I have to say, GLR was a fantastic station at that time. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, Matthew Bannister and Trevor Dan took risks and they employed people that they thought could do things and they made a brilliant station.
And that style of station, is that what kind of then gave you the enthusiasm to want to kind of start talking about setting up your own radio station?
No, it wasn't actually. It was sitting in a home in London and listening to XFM. And they were doing the trial broadcasts and I just thought it was amazing. And I actually phoned them up and said, look, if you want somebody to answer the phones, I'm there, because I totally believed in it. And it was a guy called Sammy Jacobs and he went, what, you'd answer the phones? And I went, yeah, I really want to answer the phones for this station. It's brilliant. And then he offered me a gig doing a show. And I said, no, I don't want to do a show. I don't want to take anything from anybody. I'm just there, to support you. Anyway, it ended up that I did a show and I could not believe I was working with the likes of Steve Lamacq and Marianne Hobbs. And it was like, it was one of those, have you ever seen Pump Up the Volume, the movie? It was like that, yeah, we've got a radio station and we're going to make it work. And none of us got paid or what have you, but it was just brilliant to absolutely do. And so, yeah, that just fired me up.
And you helped them win the licence and then got the bug and did some RSLs of your own in Liverpool.
Yes. And then we thought about moving back to Liverpool. And I thought, well, I've got all of this knowledge now. I can actually go for a licence in Liverpool, which I did. And won.
And that was alternative rock and dance music, I think, the format that you were proposing. It didn't really last, did it?
No, it didn't, because I didn't have any money. I'll be blatantly honest, I went bankrupt. And so I had no money. And the people I brought in to invest just wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to sell it, make money the day it got the licence. So I apologise to the people of Liverpool because it was never, ever meant to be. It was meant to be an alternative to what's going on.
And I suppose it is to some extent now, and it's doing very well, actually. A couple of 100,000 listeners now. It's called Juice.
I've no idea.
After Crash disappeared and became Juice, you started doing some stuff for Radio 2 late 90s, is that right?
No, it was about 2000. That came about because they phoned me and said, we really want to cover Glastonbury and we think you're the person to do it. And because I, go to Glastonbury, well, used to go to Glastonbury. And so they offered me a job of doing that. So I went, covered it, and then they offered me, a permanent gig. A third of Radio 2's output used to come from Birmingham. So they offered me a job and I did it from Birmingham. Then they shut Birmingham down and I'm currently in London, but living in Birmingham.
And there's this whole debate been about Five Live and Salford. Do you think it matters, having worked in Birmingham, do you think it matters a programme coming from a different place? Did it make a difference to your show?
I think it does, I think that I'm going to Salford. In October, my show will be coming from Salford. And I think it does because you see different things. You go to different things. So I actually think it does make a difference. Whether it does to the audience, I don't know. But from my perspective, I'm going to see different things from other people that are here. I'll still be able to go to gigs.
You'd be commuting north from Birmingham instead of south.
No, I'm moving to Liverpool.
Ah, moving home. Excellent. And you're going to be doing 3 hours a night back to how it used to be rather than the two that you have been doing?
Yeah, 3 hours for four nights.
How's the show going to change? Is it going to be any different? Other than being in Salford?
I hope not. I hope not. Obviously it's going to be different because it's, that perspective is going to be different. But I can't wait. I'm going to sleep with my partner. I haven't slept with him, seven nights a week for 6 years.
Wow. And the show's doing well. Radio 2's doing very well. The latest figures, yeah. 15.5 million, still the biggest station in Europe.
Brilliant.
What's the secret there at Western House? What are they doing that nobody else is doing?
God knows. It does amaze me because, we must all think, where do they come from? But they do. They keep coming. I just think it's original broadcasters, broad you know, spectrum of music. It's not homogenised yet.
And, I mean, you've done loads of years now, evenings at Radio 1, overnights at Radio 2. Mm. Do you ever just think, can they put me on in the day, please?
Oh, I wish, but it'll never happen.
Why not? Why do you think it wouldn't happen?
I don't know. I'm seen as a nighttime person. What's funny was when I was at Radio 1, they offered me drive time. And then Kid Jensen left. He was doing the Kid Jensen, you know, that sort of evening show. And they said, what do you want to do, drive time or evenings? And I opted for the evening show, the Janice Long show, 7.30 till 10, because I knew I had more freedom. And I've kind of just got slumped in that thing ever since, which I don't mind because I love the audience. I love the relationship we have and what have you. But to be honest with you, I'm a morning person.
And there's a lot more freedom, I guess, as well. You don't have to do the travel news and the junction and everything.
Yeah, and also those people who listen have no distractions. They're more discerning as well. But, you know, truly, in the real world, when I go on holiday, I'm up at 7 or before that. I'm an early morning person. I'm not a late night person.
And you said, obviously, you hadn't listened to John Peel before you joined Radio 1. What do you listen to now? Are you listening out to radio stations like Six Music that are championing new music? Or what's your station of choice?
I listen to CDs and demos. I listen to Steve Lamacq. I listen to Guy Garvey. I listen to Mark Riley.
And what out of your, we talked about all the things you've done, obviously there's a lot of TV things that we didn't mention, like Top of the Pops for many years and Live Aid as well. Out of your career so far, what has been the highlight for you?
The fact that I'm still going. You know, I just think that, you know, when you were at school and they call you in and there's a career thing and you don't know what the hell you're doing. And I thought I wanted to be a linguist or an actress. I really wanted to be an actress. But at some point, somebody sprinkled some dust over me and gave me the greatest job in the world ever. I am so lucky. I've done things that I would never have dreamt of doing. You know, I was part of, you know, covering Perestroika, Glasnost, Live Aid, as you say. I've met so many people. I've gone to festivals. I've got free records. I couldn't wish for anything else.
Fantastic. Well, it's lovely to talk to you, Janice. Good luck with the change of show, the move to Salford, the move to Liverpool.
Well, we shall meet, shan't we? Aren't you in Manchester?
Yeah, we'll meet you up here. I'll see you at some point.
All right, cool.
Welcome back to the North.
I'm coming home.
Thanks, Janice.
Take care, Stuart.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Time now on the Radio Today programme for the latest radio news. The responses submitted to Ofcom for the recent Music in Radio Formats consultation have revealed a deep split in the radio industry over the future of its regulation. The bigger groups like Global are all up for it, whilst groups which operate smaller stations such as UKRD aren't too keen. Lynx FM was off air for a day recently when power was cut to its transmitter site. BBC stations on the same mast had a backup generator due to the unique way that they're funded, which meant no interruption to Radio Lincolnshire and the national stations, but Lynx FM was off air for almost 8 hours. And find out what Ian Lee and Alan Brazil have been up to recently. They've been causing one or two problems for themselves and upsetting some people. Find out more at radiotoday.co.uk. That's the latest from me. Now it's time for David Lloyd's weekly trip down Anorak Memory Lane. Sing it with me.
Radio Moment.
We start this week 24 years ago, and Radio 2 left its medium wave frequencies.
Hello there. This is Jimmy Young on Radio 2 Medium Wave. And if you're wondering where all your regular Radio 2 programmes have got to, well, they're all now over on the FM wave band, where, of course, it's business as usual. Now, from August the 27th, this medium wave frequency is where you'll find your new station for sport and education. That's Radio 5. However, If you want to hear your Radio 2 favourites, then join us now by switching to the FM waveband. And if you're still puzzled by the move to FM only, send us a stamped addressed envelope and we'll send you a leaflet explaining the changes. Now, the address to which to write is BBC Radio...
Thank you, Jimmy. It was also complicated back then, wasn't it? You wanted to know something from a radio station and you'd write to them and they'd write back to you. This week in August is a landmark one for you if you follow the story of UK pirate radio. It was on the 15th of August 1967 that the Marine Offences Act came into force, closing those loopholes which had allowed UK citizens to play any role in offshore pirate radio. In advance, many said farewell this week, 47 years ago, for the last time.
Well, from all of us at Radio Scotland, it's not goodbye, merely au revoir. And from me, my sincere thanks to all of you very wonderful people out there, the people of Scotland, for your wonderful loyalty and support.
Radio 27 Hour is now closing down.
Some mention has been made of the fact that mine was the first voice to be heard on Radio London. It will also be the last in regrettably few minutes from now. But before that, please allow me to introduce the Managing Director of Radio London, Mr. Philip Birch.
As one listener put it, the world will get by without Big L, but I'm not sure that it will be a better place.
Farewell Pirate Radio this week in 1967, but Johnny Walker carried on.
Radio Caroline would like to extend its thanks to Mr. Harold Wilson and his Labour government for at last, after over 3.5 years of broadcasting, recognising this station's legality, its right to be here, its right to be broadcasting to Great Britain and the continent, its right to give the music and service to the peoples of Europe, which we have been doing since Easter Sunday, 1964. And we, in turn, recognise your right as our listener.
As the BBC prepared to address the challenge of mounting its own pop service and rename its existing channels, a letter to The Times this week from August 1967, and it was decrying the fact that the home service was to be demoted to the name of Radio 4. They called it a deplorable surrender of cultural values. Cultural values surrendered by Radio 4? Not a chance.
Well, first up after the news, I'm going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband. It's 8 o'clock on Monday, the 6th of December. American officials have condemned WikiLeaks after the website published a list of hundreds of facilities said to be vital for American security. Every community in Britain has been promised that it'll have access to the fastest broadband networks within 5 years.
Oh dear, James Naughtie there from Radio 4, as we wish him a very happy 63rd birthday this week. Commercial radio was still some way off by the back end of the 60s, and this week in 1969, 1,000 people, mostly teenagers, were marching to Conservative Central Office, asking for the Tories to introduce commercial radio if they were elected. Be careful with microphones. They could be live. That's some of the first advice you learn in radio. And it's 30 years this week since President Ronald Reagan wished he'd been a bit more cautious when he chose the words for a mic test.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Poor old Ronnie Reagan this week in 1984. From time to time, some commercial radio talent does end up on BBC National Radio. And this week in 83, a Radio Tees presenter arrived at Radio 1, and it was such an occasion it warranted an interview on Newsbeat.
How would you describe your style as a DJ? Unusual. You'll find it very unusual, I would think. It's a mixture of, well, all sorts of unusual things. You'll find it, I don't think you'll ever... anything quite like it before. At least I hope.
So there's no one here that you'd say that you sort of model yourself on?
No, not really. I would say, well, in the way that Steve Wright has lots of fun, I'll be having lots of fun.
Welcome to me, Mark Page, on Radio 1 this week, 31 years ago. It's 90 years this week since radio came to Hull. The station was 6KH, and Audrey Nicholson here reflects on the achievements of Tom Whitty, the chap in charge.
He made really, I think, quite an impression. He got a lot of talented amateurs, let's call them that, round him. And he played the piano brilliantly. Of course, that was a tremendous help. That really was the beginning. Mm. And then he wrote little scripts. We had nursery rhymes and all that sort of thing. And then at about quarter to five, he thought he'd get a bit serious. That's the word I want. Thank you so much. And he put on talks for his scouts.
The arrival of radio in Hull this week, 90 years ago, largely a relay of 2ZY with some local programming added in, probably at drive times. This week in 1988, some experimental splitting of AM and FM for commercial radio stations. BRMB was doing trials. Robin Volk had some BRMB gold on AM with News Across on FM. And Clyde trialled weekend splitting too with Clyde FM and Radio Clyde.
It's 4 o'clock. This is Radio Clyde and we're going to split and go our separate ways. That means on 102.5 FM and stereo, it's Mike Holloway.
Cheers, Jabe. Over Strathclyde, this is Clyde FM. Clyde has now split the airwaves. You're in tune with the most exciting commercial radio station.
Memories of the early days of splitting AM and FM this week in 1988, illustrated there by Clyde FM. It's 3 years this week since we lost Robert Robinson.
Which is the only British bird of the genus Troglo? Oh, I really do have to run at these awful words.
Robert Robinson, who died this week in 2011, he'd hosted Start the Week and Brain of Britain, and hearing his cheery voice on Radio 4 out of a hacker radio on a warm summer home counties evening was just what a British summertime was made of. From that to something completely different.
Hey, it's 3.5 minutes after 7 o'clock. How, everybody all right? You're washing up, you're keeping clean and everything. I worry about you when I'm not here. You know, 69 degrees, kind of cloudy skies, everybody. Let me take a look and see what's happening.
The sound of Cousin Brucey, a huge American broadcaster who hosted his last show on WNBC AM, New York City, this week in 1977. Brucey loved playing his jingles mid-link and often mid-sentence, as did Radio 1's Tony Blackburn. 275-285. So it wasn't a surprise that Tony was called upon for comment this week 2 years ago. And Radio 1 said it would scrap jingles.
I think the singing jingles are just fantastic. They just give that station that fresh sound. You get a message across. It's called branding.
Tony Blackburn has Radio 1 announced the end of jingles as such this week 2 years ago.
Tony Blackburn!
So with the announcement last year that Sony wouldn't sponsor the Radio Academy Awards anymore, this edition of Test Match Special this week 23 years ago...
It just didn't quite get his leg over.
And the last Clitheroe Kid on Radio 2 42 years ago...
Excuse me.
Those are this week's radio moments.
He hit a four over the wicket's head, and he was out for nine.
Radio moments.
Thank you, David. Another excellent edition, and thanks too to Roy for the news, and to my guest this week, Janice Long. Special mentions as well for Kevin Leach at IPDTL. We used their connection to hook up with Janice, and Mick Meadows, Janice's producer at Radio 2, for helping with the technicals at their end. That's it for this week. My name's Stuart Clarkson, looking after the programme for a few more weeks for Trevor Dan. I'll be along very soon with something else.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.